Okay, welcome. I'm going to start us off with a prayer. Thank you, Lord, for bringing us here tonight. Thank you for giving us the courage and the willingness to continue this workshop, to dig deeper, to allow you to show us truth about our disease. Please, Father, enable us to set aside everything we think we know so that we may have an open mind and a new experience. Please help us to see the truth about our mental obsession before we take a drink or a drug. In your name we pray. Amen. So our set aside prayer for the next few weeks will be that, focusing on the mental obsession. I suggest that whenever you guys open your book to read, to transcribe, to answer questions, that you say that set aside prayer and also utilize it as much as you can. Keeps us kind of focused, keeps our subconscious, brings from our subconscious into our consciousness what we're actively engaging in, which is going to be the mental obsession for the next few weeks. So we're reading the 7 pages, 6 to 8 pages. We're transcribing, then we're rereading, and then we're answering questions. So that's kind of how I would suggest that you guys go through this work each time. Read the pages, then transcribe, reread them as you transcribe, and go directly to your questions. And then we bring all of that to our group. So tonight we're going to go over assignment 7, I believe it is.
Oh, I thought it was
Or assignment 6.
six. Yeah.
The mental obsession, the second half of There Is a Solution. So we'll be talking about the mental obsession that occurs before we take a drink. But we'll also be discussing the solution. Because the chapter is entitled There Is a Solution, and in these next 7 pages, they're going to let us know. They're going to give us hints. They're going to begin to walk us towards a solution. Remember that there is no help for our physical craving, our allergy, this phenomenon that we suffer from. The only help we have is to abstain. And the further away we get from it, as long as we stay away from a drink or drug, it becomes irrelevant. This mental obsession is something that the God of our understanding can truly, truly help us with. This is something that we can recognize goes away, maybe comes in waves. Maybe turn from obsessive thinking to fleeting thoughts. Ultimately, there is help. There is a solution for this. And it is so wonderful to know that this mental torture that we go through, we can recover from. It's really beautiful. So I'll start at the very bottom of page 22, where we left off. Last week, we say we know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. So that was our last little reminder in the book of the phenomenon of craving, what happens after we take the drink. And at the top, we transcribe step 1, mental obsession of the mind before the first drink. We use this section as a tool to look at why is it? If for one reason or another, I dry out for any length of time, why can't I stay stopped? Am I mentally powerless over alcohol when I take the first drink?
Hi.
So why can't we stay stopped? We've spent the last 6 weeks discussing the fact that we're powerless, that we're different, that we're beginning to accept and acknowledge what happens when we put this poison into our system. And one would think that that would be enough for us to abstain, to stay away. But for some reason, all of that knowledge does not keep us sober. This is the insanity that we're going to begin to speak of, that our second step talks about overcoming through a power greater than ourselves. So this begins the mental obsession. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. So knowing all of this about ourselves with this physical allergy is pointless to us if we're not going to discuss the mental obsession and why we continue to go back to it over and over again against our own will. What is happening? What is going on? Is it lack of willpower? Are we weak? It says here that therefore the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. So Dr. Silkworth told us how imperative it was for us to understand that any description of the alcoholic which leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. Right? That's what he said.
I need sauce.
He said that any factor that leaves out any description of the alcoholic that leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. Now, all of a sudden, they're telling us that the main problem centers in our mind rather than our body. Why is that? The problem is that I have this complete inability to change my thinking. So I'm going to utilize this solution that we're going to walk slowly into to change that thinking for me, to change that perception for me. I cannot do it on my own. And this is a description of it. If you ask him why he started on the last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Now, how true is that when we look at our past and when we look at the fact that we've gone back to it time and time and time again? Having a headache, hitting yourself on the head with a hammer to get rid of it. Offering all of these alibis and reasons why we're doing it. If you had my life, you'd do it too. If you felt the way I did, you would do it too. The truth is, we don't know. We have no idea. It creates this level of desperation, self-loathing, being less than, that ultimately gets us to reach out for help and come through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody please help me. I don't know what's going on. I can't take it anymore. Once in a while, he may tell the truth. And the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time. But in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. And so one of our goals going through this work is going to be to understand what our malady is. Put a face to the malady. See, I don't know why I do it, but what I have come to terms with is that my spiritual malady has an identity of a real man never asks for help. And a real man doesn't need anything from anybody. And I surely don't need you to love me, because that would be weakness. And so recognizing that malady, I'm now able to thwart off this obsession. When these fleeting thoughts come, I get to see the exact nature of them. And here's the thing, I can do nothing about it, nothing whatsoever. I can do all the writing I want, I can do all the talking I want, but ultimately being able to lift that up to God and ask for that help has been my saving grace for the last year and a few months, to be able to recognize it and ask him to show me that this is not weakness, that I am not weak because I cannot control my thoughts and my mind, and that I am not weak because the delusion of the mental obsession is so real and so strong that picking up a drink or a drug sounds like a good idea from time to time. So once this malady has a real hold, they're a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect that they are down for the count. So when this obsession takes over, we're so defeated. When we succumb to this desire again, we feel like losers. We're baffled. We don't have the answers. And it's the essence of true hopelessness in our lives. And I will tell you, there is hope. There is hope. And if you've been sober for quite some time, that doesn't mean that there isn't a malady in your life that's creating a mental obsession that is making you very uncomfortable and very uneasy at times. And there is hope for that as well. That's the point of these steps, so we can get to the bottom of it, so that we can get cracked open, drudge up this muddy water, and see what's really underneath. How true this is, few realize. In a vague way, their families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will rouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will. So our families watch us, and they have all this hope for us, but they just don't understand. We read last week how it says back of them is this world of ignorance and misunderstanding. They don't understand the alcoholic and the addict and why we're doing what we're doing. And until we understand it, then we feel hopeless. Sometimes we understand it and we think that's enough, and then we go back out and then we feel hopeless. So it's very important to understand that this knowledge of this is not going to help us. Surrender to a power greater than ourselves is our only hope for this mental obsession. The tragic truth is that if a man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. Without help, without recovery, without God, we are doomed, just like Silkworth said. Their diagnosis is that we're doomed. He's lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has arrived in practically every case long before it's suspected. The asterisk says the only requirement for membership is that the problem drinker have a desire to stop drinking. But is a desire the only requirement for me to stay sober for good? See, that's a really deep question and a good contemplation. I have this desire to stop. It makes me a member. It gives me a fellowship. Is that desire enough? Dr. Silkworth told us we need to follow a few simple rules if we're going to recover. And that's what we're beginning to take this journey for. Understand what these rules are. What are these steps like? What's involved? First part is get an idea of what we're suffering from. So now we're going to talk about the idea of choice. And this can be a tough one. Do we have a choice? Do we not have a choice? The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And that asterisk says, do I ever choose not to, but drink anyway or drug anyway? Has there been a time in your life where you made a conscious decision not to do it and you did it anyway? Do you suffer from a mental obsession in your brief moments of sobriety in between your binges? Are there times where you are telling yourself something is wrong here and I need to stop and I'm just not going to do it today? I tried to stop just for one day this last time. It was so frustrating. I tried to prove myself an exception to the rule. The book says by every form of experimentation and self-deception. And I did. I tried over and, oh, just give me one day. I'm going to prove to all of you that I'm not one of you. And that was a little over a year ago. And it was miserable. And I had all this knowledge. And it didn't matter. And my obsession continued to tell me that I'm different, that I'm okay, that I'm going to be able to control it, that I don't need you guys, that you guys are weak. What a hell to live in and walk through every day. If we are alcoholic, this is one of our questions, right? And we're powerless over alcohol, our lives are unmanageable. We can't control the amount once we start. We can't stay stopped on our own. We're all admitting that. We're all acknowledging that. I'm sure everybody's answer to that was yes, that's me. Then how can we say that we have a choice? And it's not that we don't have a choice in life. And it's not that we're weak. And it's not that we're less than. It is when it comes to these substances, we have no choice. And if I truly have no power and no choice, I am left with only one option, and that is to seek help. And if I'm beyond human aid, then I must seek help from the power of God. And it can be as simple as, God, I do not have a choice in this. Please help me. That simple. That level of surrender is completely efficient. Everybody is at a different place with the power of their own understanding, the God of their own understanding. All that is required is this admission that I can't. Ultimately, we get to a place of you can, but there's nothing wrong with being at a place of I can't. Can you? Can you? Please. That simple. And that's enough. And as time goes by and as this delusional, powerful, cunning, baffling, subtle, crazy mind starts to slow down, starts to relax a little bit, days go by where we're not thinking about using and drinking. How did that happen? How did it happen? I couldn't do it. So it must be the power of God. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. So go to that place. Remember last week we talked about the sad wives, the hurting children, the disgusted friends and employers, the financial insecurities, all of these things that have happened, right? I want you to, for a minute, to go back to the place where you saw that in your life, but you went back and did it anyway. You went back and put the substances in your body against your own will, recognizing all the damage that was happening in your life. That's the mental obsession. So powerful, so sneaky. Maybe you told yourself, no, I'm doing this because I want to. Or no, I'm doing this because I don't care. It doesn't matter what rationalization was going on. It was a lie. And it wasn't coming from your moral compass that was saying, don't. Don't. That voice is so subtle that sometimes we can barely hear it. And at other times we don't hear it at all. All we hear is the voice of the obsession. Just do it. It's okay. It's going to be different this time. You've got this. You're in control. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted by the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. One of the principles of our program is that we have to get rid of all of our old ideas. Some of us tried to hold on to some of our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. So there's threadbare ideas in us that we are in control. There's an element of surrender involved in recognizing that and lifting it up. I can't. Can you? I know he can in my life. I can share that with you. I can't. There's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time. So here's how. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us begun to drink in this nonchalant way and after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? Only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I'll stop at the sixth drink, or what's the use anyhow? So now I hate myself, so I might as well keep going. How did this happen? Oh, and by the way, I'm not doing it again tomorrow. And then here I am all over again. See, I wake up. Well, even if I'm hungover, even if it's been a 2-3-4 day binge, there is a moment of clarity that sets in, even if it's very brief. And at that moment, that mental, there's no craving happening. That mental obsession is on me like white on rice. And no matter how bad I don't want to do it, I'm doing it again. Scary. Very scary. Very subtle. And long-term sobriety, they can begin in the form of fleeting thoughts. They can begin in lack of action. Well, maybe I don't need this anymore. Maybe I don't need to do this anymore. Maybe I don't need to do that anymore. You know, a wise man once told me, when you ask him, Do I really have to do all of this stuff you're talking about? All of it? Everything? All the time? And he said, I'll tell you what. Why don't you slowly take one thing away until you drink again? How about that? Slowly take one thing away. Slowly take one of these suggestions away as you get further and further away and you think you're good until you do it all over again. Something really to contemplate, to really think about how important it is to continue, how sneaky this is. When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he's probably placed himself beyond human aid. Do you believe that? It's a question for you to ask yourself, to contemplate. Do I believe that I end up in this place where I'm beyond human aid? Does my experience show that once this obsession is on me, nothing is going to stop me? Once this sort of thinking is fully established, there's a difference between thinking about drinking and drugging and obsessing over it. And we'll talk about that next week when we get into more about alcoholism. But there are requirements for us. Basically, like being on guard, especially early in the beginning, for a long period of time. And I'm sure we could talk to some of you that have a lot of years that still talk about being on guard to a certain extent in your life in order to remain recovered, being aware. There's an asterisk at the bottom that says, do I think anything human can stop the part of me that takes me to the first drink? How ugly is that part of us? We want it gone so bad. There is a solution. That's the beauty of it. There is a solution for this. God is all powerful, all loving, and will work miracles in your life. And unless he's locked up, he may die or permanently go insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop, but can't. If it wasn't for the grace of God, millions more would have suffered. If it wasn't for this book and this process and this enlightenment that has been gifted to all of us, they wrote thousands more in the 30s. Well, it would be millions more today. Millions more. And why hasn't it? Because but for the grace of God. That's why. Do I believe that the 12-step process is what it takes for me to change? And that it's my only solution? I believe you guys believe that. I don't think you'd be here. You'll recognize the workshop shrinking. And as you remain, you prove it to yourself. You believe it. You believe that this 12-step process will save you. I'm here to tell you that it will. It will change your life, even if you've been through it. Here they're going to talk about what it takes to live on a spiritual basis. So they're going to tell me here that there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for a successful consummation. So they're giving me a hint, what I'm walking into. I've done a little bit of self-searching I've done a little bit of admitting. I've incorporated a little bit of humility. Yes, I'm ill. Yes, I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I'm different. Now what do? Continued self-searching, leveling of my pride, and confession of my shortcomings. That's what the process is going to require for a successful consummation. And that's the journey that we're going to embark on. Bill's giving us a little hint. Almost none of us liked it. Remember, simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. That's what we read in Bill's story. Simple but not easy. It means destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. That's the solution. How am I going to do that? I'm going to do some self-searching. I'm going to get humble and level my pride. And I'm going to confess some shortcomings. And that's how we're going to make our beginning. Why would I do this? But we saw it really worked in others. And we come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we've been living it. My life sucked. I was sick and tired of where I was, how I was living, how I was feeling. God brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to meet some people that I could relate to. I listened to their stories. They were like me. They had recovered. I started to believe in the level of hopelessness and the futility, the uselessness of my life. I thought I was useful to everybody when I was useful to nobody. All I was doing was damage. So when therefore I was approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for me but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools that had been laid at my feet. Have you been approached by people in which the problem has been solved? How do you feel about picking up a simple kit of spiritual tools? Let's not sugarcoat it. It is a simple process, but it is definitely not easy. According to them, it says, we have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed to the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. Not even dreamed of this. As a result of the 12 steps, I will experience the spiritual realm. When I'm centered in the triangle of unity, recovery, and service. So now we're going to start talking about the solution. We touched on the mental obsession. The next chapter is all about the mental obsession. They're going to share with me and you what's the solution. There's three facts in the book. The tremendous fact, the great fact, and the central fact, right? The tremendous fact at the beginning of this chapter, it says that they've all found a common solution. That's our bond, right? The cement that binds us. And we're talking about the great fact. The great fact is just this and nothing less. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. Deep and affected spiritual experiences. What do you mean by that? What does that even look like? How is that possible? Well, the central fact of their life today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us, which we could never do by ourselves. So hold on a minute. You just got through telling me that I'm mental, basically, that the main problem centers in my mind, that I'm going to beat myself in the head with a hammer to get rid of a headache, that I'm going to drink against my own will, that I have no hope, that I'm beyond human aid, that I'm going to hate myself, that there's nothing anybody can do or say to help me. And now you're sitting here telling me that some spiritual experience is going to fix it? And what do you mean the Creator has entered into your heart in a way that is indeed miraculous? You're going from this page of talking about the hell that I lived in to the very next page of telling me, using words like enter into my heart, Creator, miraculous, doing things for me that I couldn't do for myself. Is this real? Do I believe it? I'll tell you, man, highlight the great fact, highlight the central fact. Super awesome facts, testimonies from the first 100 that wrote this book. They just got done sharing with me that they're just like me and they lived in hell. But hold on a minute, man. Imagine the beauty of going over to somebody and say, hey, brother, my Creator has entered into my heart in a way that is indeed miraculous. He's doing for me things I could never do for myself. And to have that come from your heart and to mean it and to look somebody in the eye when you say that. You feel that power? Wow. I want that. How do I do that? Well, they gave me a hint at the top, so I'm going to start with some self-searching. You know, what am I not really looking at right now? Leveling in my pride, what does that mean? Confess my shortcomings? You mean everything? Well, let's see where God takes me with that. So it tells us to see appendix, page 567. So we're going to pop back there real quick. Because I'll tell you, man, that sounds a little serious. And what if I have trouble even believing in God? I mean, come on. What are you talking about? Your Creator, miraculous, your heart. You know, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, man. I just don't want to do this stuff anymore. How about that? Right? Well, hold on, Jason. Why don't you choose a God of your own understanding? Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what snapped Bill out of this prejudiced state that he was in, this logic and reason. Hold on, Jason. Just choose the God of your own understanding. Slow down a minute, brother. Let the God of your own understanding come into your heart. Let the God of your own understanding do miraculous things in your life. Right? Let's just agree on one thing. We're beyond human aid. Okay. So let's create a fellowship around us, but let's not rely on that with everything we got. It's only one part of the triangle. So the spiritual experience was written for people that might be struggling, man. Like Bill had a sudden and profound experience, right? We read that. All of a sudden, let's say mountaintops, wind blowing through the mountaintops or something he said like that, right? But remember on the very next page, Bill Wilson, he was depressed. He was miserable. He was thinking of drinking. And the only thing I say was working with another alcoholic. See, that malady and that obsession was just rearing its ugly head in his life. So let's not get caught up in the sudden and profound. Let's just all agree that there's a solution and it's bigger than me. And I want it to enter into my heart and do miraculous things. I want it to do something for me that I've never been able to do for myself. I have that desire. And then the next question is, do I believe this process and this program will work for me and can help me get there? Am I willing to surrender to this? Am I willing to set aside everything I think I know? Whatever it is, not forget it, especially if you've been in the program for years. This isn't about forgetting what you've learned, forgetting what you know. It's just about setting aside for a minute so that I can grow. So I can make some room. For what? For this Creator to enter into my heart. A little bit more here. for miraculous things to happen, right? In order for me to make room for him to come into my heart, I got to set aside some stuff. Just got to set it aside. So a spiritual experience, we wrote at the top, most of us come to the spiritual awakening by what is called the educational variety. That is education through learning about our problem and our solution by experimenting, by experiencing, excuse me, the 12-step process outlined in this book. So this is a spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. This paradigm shift is what's happening to us. It's our saving grace. We just can't do it on our own. That's the essence of the spiritual experience. Yet it's true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. So if you are here tonight, if you are wondering, why isn't this sudden? Why don't I have this all of a sudden extraordinary faith and belief? Stop looking for it. Don't try and find the spiritual experience. Do the work that's laid out in front of you. Show up here. Talk to sponsor. Go to your groups. Do some reading. Do some writing. Let God do the work. Let God do God's stuff in your life. Let him show up for you. The more I have expectations and try to make it happen, man, nobody has lived up to my expectations in my life. That's been part of my problem. Putting expectations on spiritual experiences and the power of God, man, let's try to avoid that. The first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it's not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Immediate God consciousness. Okay, so we're reading 84 through 88 every day, right? What step does it talk about? 11th. Having just created God consciousness, we are not going to be inspired at all times. So it tells me in my 11th step. We're all here in our first step. Think about that for a minute. Just contemplate it. It's okay. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. Think about the first few months of sobriety. Think about the years spent prior to that trying to achieve that. Give yourself a pat on the back. Understand something is happening here. If you sit here sober and in the past you have found that it was impossible for you to do so, go look in the mirror and ask yourself, how is this happening? The answer is the grace of God in your life and an experience that you are having. It's already happening. Embrace it. Endure it, because it's going to be painful. It's just the way it is. Patient endurance. That's what we do. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. If you are sitting here tonight with an awareness that there is a power greater than you, that is the essence, the root of a spiritual experience. Congratulations. That's all we need to make this beginning. Let God build it. Let God do God stuff. I'm just going to show up. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. That's what'll burn you out. I'm intolerant. I'm just belligerently denying this. There's no way this worked for me. God ain't going to show up for me. I'm not worthy. Nope. Ain't going to happen. We find that we need have no difficulty with spirituality or program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. So we just read there is a solution, self-searching, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings. Okay, there's a hint of what we're doing. Willingness, honesty, open-mindedness. These are essential, indispensable. We cannot do without them. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. What is our level of contempt? Is there any level of contempt? Are we willing to investigate openly, willingly, honestly? Questions to contemplate. Definite requirements. Open-mindedness is truly essential. Old ideas have to be completely discarded. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, back on page 25, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. Half measures will avail us what? Nothing. You hear that all the time. No middle of the road solution. I love this asterisk, what we write in the bottom margin. It says, if I'm hearing things that have nothing to do with how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, then I'm hearing middle of the road solution. Contemplate that. What are you hearing at meetings? What are you hearing from the people you're talking to in Alcoholics Anonymous? What are you hearing in the recovery homes, in the treatment centers? What are you hearing? Are you hearing about an effective way, a deep and effective way to have a spiritual experience? I shared some of that with you tonight. Try to make it simple and easy. Don't overthink it. Don't look for it. Right? I can't. Can you? Recognizing that I am beyond human aid. God is the answer. God is the solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which where there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. So here's our choices. Were you in a spot beyond human aid? If you were, if you believe that, one of those choices is to continue, go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of an intolerable situation. What's that intolerable situation? Me, the way I feel, the way I don't feel, the way you act. The way you don't act. My loneliness, my fear, right? So I have a choice. I could just go on blotting it out. What am I going on to? The bitter end, not just the end, the bitter end. Ugly, sour. What's my other choice? Accept spiritual help. accept spiritual help. Question to you guys tonight is, what does spiritual help look like to you? What does it mean to you? Something for you to contemplate, journal about. What is spiritual help in your life? What is it? And here's the harder question. Am I willing to accept spiritual help in my life? Am I open to new things? Am I open to discussions with people that I'm attracted to, but I'm too intimidated by it? Am I hanging on to prejudice so much that I'm not willing to embark on journeys and explore relationships with God that I said I never would do? And that it's so wrong. And I just don't believe in that. And those people are crazy. I don't know. Are we willing to accept spiritual help? Are you willing? It's a question for yourself. And when you answer it honestly enough, you will find areas where you haven't been willing to completely accept spiritual help. I think it's an eye opener. I think it's an area of our lives that we can be truly honest in peace and solidarity without anyone else knowing and contemplating that with this power that we're trying to grow towards. Why have I been unwilling in certain aspects or from certain people or certain avenues to accept? Why does spiritual help have to look like what I think it has to look like? Is that spiritual help? Is that spiritual growth? Am I just maintaining? You see, if I'm going to take that second choice, accept spiritual help, then I got to take a look at what does that even look like to me? What does that mean? What is that? Is that religion? Is that Jesus? Is that Buddha? Is that Hindu? Is that yoga? Is that Catholicism? What is it? Is that me doing God my way and calling it God in my own understanding? Because it's more comfortable. What is it? What's spiritual help? And then am I really willing to accept spiritual help? Acceptance of spiritual help means I'm getting it from somebody else, right? It means I'm going to somebody else very vulnerable and carrying this stuff around that I've been against my whole life. Why? Because I'm better than that. Why? Because I don't need that. Why? Because a real man never asks anybody for help. That's why. I'm not going to let you know that I'm willing to get on my knees and be vulnerable and cry and ask for spiritual help. I don't know. I've recognized some gurus in this big book awakening process, man. I've met a couple of them. And I have balked at getting close to them. I've been intimidated, and I still am to this day. Scary. Because they have something I want, but there's a little piece of me that's not completely willing to surrender anything and everything I got. Because I want to hang on to a little something. So my answer, am I willing to accept spiritual help? Not in all avenues of my life, no. Something to recognize and work on. Not proud of that. It's scary, man. Scary. Why would I accept spiritual help? This we did because we honestly wanted to. That's why. And we're willing to make the effort. Ain't going to be easy. So now we're going to tell me a story about a man named Roland Hazard. And that man named Roland Hazard was the real big beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. Roland Hazard went to Dr. Jung. Dr. Jung told him about spiritual experience and what was required. Before Silkworth talked to Bill, Roland Hazard went back to the Oxford group before Ebby went to Bill and told them about this. I heard Bill speak. It was probably from the 40s or 50s. It was kind of grainy, and it was like an hour-long speak in this big auditorium. Black and white, watched it on my phone, but I'll never forget the first thing he said was the real beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous was Roland Hazard going back to the Oxford group. I was like, wow. So this is his story, a piece of it. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of a celebrated physician, a psychiatrist, Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. Got some self-knowledge. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for this fall. There we go. That's us. Put yourself there. So he went back to his doctor, whom he admired, and he asked him point blank why he could not recover. Now, Dr. Jung was parallel with Freud. Like, this is how high up this guy was. This is a world-renowned psychiatrist. Roland Hazard's got a lot of money. He's going to the best of the best of the best. So he says, Dr. Jung, why can I not recover? He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems. Sounds exactly like what we read last week. How the alcoholic, willpower is strong in all other respects, except when it comes to alcohol. We're often able, intelligent people. We are. We're just different. And that's what they mean by a grateful alcoholic. I'm starting to see that. Thank God for me being different, because it's enabled me to start this walk and this journey, to have this new relationship with this power that I always believed in, that I always believed existed, but I never had a relationship with. I never relied upon. I never talked to in an intimate matter. I never brought into my life when I was really, really suffering. What a blessing it's been. He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. Dr. Jung told him the same thing that Silkworth told Bill. You're doomed. You're hopeless, man. We can't help you. He could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion. Asterisk says Silkworth felt the same way. First, about that condition is hopeless. But this man still lives. Roland Hazard recovered. He's a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other free men go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. Simple attitude. One of my favorite parts of the second step. They'll give us a little hint here. We transcribe at the top of that page. We'll look at a certain simple attitude in step two, page 55, paragraph 4. If I can lay aside prejudice, if I can think honestly, and if I've been encouraged to search diligently inside myself, I can find God. Okay? I'm not going to go any further on that because we're not in the second step. Soak that in, though. Soak it in, right? What do you mean I got to try and find God? He's already inside me. Is that what you're telling me? Soak that in. Just soak it in. Simple attitude. See, so Dr. Jung is trying to help Roland. Roland can't recover. They gave us a little brief paragraph there. Said, hold on, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story, but this guy still lives and he's free, right? We listened to Bill Wilson's story. he still lived and he was free. We're going to go on to in the next couple of weeks talking about some more stories. The last one, he lives and he's free. Stories in the back of the book, there's 42 of them. They lived and they were free. Hope. Hope. One common denominator. One common denominator. The power and the presence of God in their life. That's it. Some of our alcoholic readers may think that they can do without spiritual help. Good question. And if you feel that way, I'm not here to change your mind about that. Not at all. All I can do is share with you that without spiritual help, I certainly would not be sitting here with you tonight. There's no way. I would have no desire. Let's tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with this doctor. So now they're going to go back. They just got through telling me, hey, wait a minute, he's free, you live. They want me to keep reading. They say, hey, keep reading, man. I know this all sounds grim and horrible. All I'm telling you is that you're hopeless, you need God. You're hopeless, you need God. I mean, come on, man. Well, we're going to get this simple attitude. We're going to do these simple steps. We're going to get fearless and thorough. And let God do God's stuff. That's what we're going to do. What other choice do we have? Well, I just told you. You can go on to the bitter end and continue blotting out the consciousness of your intolerable situation, whatever that may be in your life. Go ahead. If you have a third alternative, let me know. I'd like to hear it. I haven't found one. My mental obsession tries to tell me sometimes there's all kinds of other alternatives. That's kind of scary. That's a whole nother discussion. So here's what the doctor told him. You've got the mind of a chronic alcoholic, Roland. So doctor, help me. Why can't I stop, man? I'm paying you thousands and thousands of dollars. I flew overseas to see you. You're the best in the world. What are you talking about? Well, brother, you got the mind of a chronic alcoholic. You're hopeless. Where's the main problem lie? We just read it. Centers right in our minds. What did Roland Hazard have? The mind of a chronic alcoholic. Okay. Now you'll hear people, there's a difference here. Get up to that podium and say, I got the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Let me explain something to you right now. If I had the mind of a chronic alcoholic today, I would not be sitting here. I would be drinking. Okay? Very, very important. Yes, I suffered from the mind of a chronic alcoholic, but I have recovered from that. This is where we need to walk towards. If I keep beating the crap out of myself and going up to the podium and saying, I got the mind of a chronic alcoholic and I love the effects produced by it, then I just might walk back out there and take a drink. I want to give a little bit of praise to the power of God in my life that has helped me with this. So he tells Roland, you got the mind of a chronic alcoholic, bud. And check it out. I've never seen one case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Just like Silkworth told Bill, you're screwed. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. Well, yeah. Why wouldn't he? He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, the doctor replied, there is. Well, I want to know, what do you mean? Exception? I've spent six different times in the last 7 years trying to prove myself an exception to the rule with every form of experimentation and self-deception. We'll read about that a little bit later. That's what I've done. Now you're telling me there's an exception? Okay, well, the exception to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. This is nothing new. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. What's the great fact? The great fact is this and nothing less, that we have had vital, deep, and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude, right? Dr. Jung tells Roland Hazard, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. We read the spiritual experience tonight to remind us all it doesn't have to be sudden and profound. We talked about not looking for it, not putting expectations on it. We also talked about how we're all having it here, being here, sitting here, sober. Acknowledge that. Recognize that. You can also just say, thank you, God. It's enough. I can't. Can you? Thank you. There you go. Beautiful prayer. Simple, effective, easy, humble, real. That's how we can approach God. I know it's not easy. I know all of us are in different areas with that. And so we have to be fair to each and all of us and understand some of us find it a little easier. Some of us find it a little hard. Some of us want nothing to do with it. Some of us believe that it won't work in our lives. Some of us believe we already got it. We don't really need more. Like there's all kinds of things happening here, but God's working in each one of these little squares. He's going to meet you where you're at. He's going to show up in your life how you need him to show up. All you have to do is acknowledge it. Be willing and open to it. Say, hey, here I am. I got a mental obsession that I can't stop. I can't stay stopped. I got this physical craving that once I start, I can't stop. Man, I'm going to work these steps. I'm in this workshop. Can you help me, God, please? And if I think I already know you so well, can you show me that I don't know you so well? Can you allow me to set aside what I think I know and experience what is happening here right now? I want more. Show me. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. So here's the definition of a spiritual experience. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men or women, are suddenly cast to one side. And a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. It's another good part of the book to highlight. It's the definition of a spiritual experience. I'm going to point a few things out. Let's not get caught up in the word huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Let's not get caught up in the word suddenly cast to one side. Let's not get caught up in the word dominate, right? So if we take those little ideas out of it, we say, hey, wait a minute. Has there been an emotional displacement and rearrangement occur in my life in the last 6 weeks, 6 years, whatever, how long I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous? Have I kind of started to recognize that my old ideas and emotions and attitudes toward life are slowly beginning to be replaced with these new conceptions and motives, this perception about the paradigm shift that I talked about, right? I know for a fact that each and every square here tonight can recognize some level of that has occurred in your life just by the fact that you're here. That's a spiritual experience happening in your life right now. Right here, right now. Beautiful. So when you get caught up in what does it mean? What does it look like? My old ideas are gone. God ideas are coming in. Compassion, love, and empathy for others is happening in my life. This willingness to change who I am, recognize who I'm not, understand what I've done, willing to make it right, and stick my hand out and be of service to other people. And I'm going to take all of those blessings and I'm going to acknowledge this power that enabled that to happen in my life. And I'm going to do that every day. That's it. That's your ongoing spiritual experience. Yes, there's highs and lows. Yes, that when you're done with your fifth step, you're like, wow. Yes, when you go and make that amends that you never thought was possible, and that person hugs you and tells you they love you and it's okay, you're like, wow. Yes, when you're sitting down with another alcoholic or addict and you do the fifth step with them and they're crying and you're hugging them, and then you're really like, wow. So of course there's highs and lows and legitimate spiritual experiences, but what I want you guys to understand is it's happening right now. Be grateful for that. Be thankful for that. Don't search for it or seek it. Search for God. Let him dictate how that's going to happen. Or if you want to call her her, I mean, I believe there's no sex to God. God is an entity, the all-powerful, loving creator, spirit of everything. You know what I mean? So, for whatever that's worth. So, in fact, this is what the doctor tells him, this is it, man. This is your exception. Let's get all your emotions rearranged. Throw out your ideas, your attitudes. Let some new conceptions and motives start to guide your life. And he tells him, in fact, I've been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangement within you. With many individuals, the method which I employed are successful. But I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. So see, I don't know if you guys are familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy. Now, you go to a psychiatrist, you're having all these problems. They're going to help you change the way you think so that you change the way you act so that you change the way you feel, okay? And that's why Dr. Jung said, I've been successful with people, but never with an alcoholic like you. Why? Because the main problem centers in my mind. Why? Because I'm beyond human aid. What is Alcoholics Anonymous? What are the 12 steps? Cognitive behavioral therapy with the power of God to change my thinking, with the power of God to change my actions, with the power of God to change my feelings. Bam, that's why it works. Crazy. Beautiful. So upon hearing this, Roland's like, well, man, hey, I'm religious. Got it. Our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that after all, he was a good church member. Because he's smart enough to hear what Dr. Jung's telling him. Hey, bro, this is what needs to happen. I can't help you. So Roland's like, oh, you mean God's got to do that for me. Dr. Jung didn't tell him that. He told him that in a roundabout way. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctors telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. Why? Why? Because belief in the power of God is not enough. I got to allow God to work in my life. I got to allow God to change me. I got to allow God to remove this mental obsession that I'm suffering from. Believing in him is not enough. I believed in God my whole life. I was raised. My grandmother was Seventh-day Adventist. She was a wonderful woman, the most loving woman. Thank God for her and bless her. Come from a broken home. Didn't really get the love I needed from my two parents. And my grandmother filled that gap, and she instilled this power of Jesus in my life and this belief. And I've been praying since I prayed for my mom and dad to get back together. From the time I was like 4 to the time I was like 12, right? And then I think there's a little part of me that was like, man, this don't work. Stuff don't work. I started getting loaded, right? But I always prayed. I always believed. I was never the guy that would say, nah, man, there ain't no God. Nah, man, that stuff ain't real. But I didn't allow it to work in my life. I surely didn't have a relationship with him. I was not ready to surrender parts of myself or anything to him. And I surely wasn't going to admit weakness and say, man, I really need help. So that's what Dr. Jung is explaining to Roland. Hey, man, just because you go to church, it's not enough. Here's what I tell. When I sit down and work with the man, sits across from me and says, dude, I'm totally religious. I go to church. I look him right back in the eye and say, then what are you doing here? Huh? Why are you here? And that's what Dr. Jung's explaining to Roland. If you're such a good church member and you're such a follower of God, why are you so beaten and broken and you can't control anything in your life. Or doesn't that go against all the principles that you've been sitting in the pews and listening to and being surrounded by all these people that are living in this joy and this freedom? That's why it ain't nothing. Because I'm an alcoholic and an addict, man. That's why. So if I'm going to do this God thing, it cannot be half-assed. That's it. It's got to be real. And the beauty of this program is it's shown me it's so personal. It's so awesome. I'm a Christian today, but I'm not religious, man. So you go figure that one out. I have a wonderful relationship with my God, but I am not condemned. Ever. And it's beautiful. If you ever want to talk to me about that on a personal level, man, you guys got my number. You can call me anytime. I came upon that here in AA. So here was a terrible dilemma in which our friend found himself when he had the extraordinary experience, which we have already told you made him a free man. Another paragraph might want to highlight something very, very important here. Circle it, underline, whatever you want to do. We didn't do any transcribing here. I don't understand why, but this is how seeking God must look in your life. I'm not searching for all these experiences. I have no expectations, but I'm desperate. I'm hurting. I'm broken. I do not have an answer. I thought I knew you, God. What's happening? We in our turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. All the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us. Or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. Destruction of self-centeredness. Turn all things over to the Father of Light who presides over us all. There is a solution. Self-searching, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings. Honesty, willingness, open-mindedness, these are indispensable. We in our turn sought the same escape with the desperation of a drowning man. That's how we work this program, like we are dying, like it is life or death. Sounds so serious. It is. How important is your life? Remember the second choice. Go ahead and go on to the bitter end. Blotting out the consciousness of your intolerable situation. We also read in Bill's story how a man committed suicide in his house. We also read in the doctor's opinion how some of us have made the supreme sacrifice. It's an ugly disease, man. Am I willing to seek the same escape of these people that are telling me they've recovered like I'm drowning? Think about that for a minute. Drowning. What would you do to get out of the water to save your life if you were drowning? What seemed at first a flimsy reed, the little tules that grow on the side of the lake, right? Those blades of grass that you see coming up out of the water. Imagine trying to pull yourself out of the water by one of those. What would happen? You'd fall over. You ain't getting out on them, right? That's what God seems like at times. That's what God seems like in some of our lives. Not showing up. I'm not good enough. Not going to be there for me. How am I going to utilize this? Well, I am utilizing this, and I am being relieved of this mental obsession. Okay, how are you going to relay that message and carry it to somebody then? How are you going to share it with them? Are you going to be adamant about the flimsy reed and how it used to be flimsy for you? But what did it turn out to be? the powerful and loving hand of God saved your life, pulled you back from what? The gates of death. That's what it said. Gates of death. Wow. That's how powerful he is. Man. I don't know about you, but I want more of that. And I'll tell you, it's painful. Painful endurance is a big part of my life. Trying to surrender and to be patient and to stay still, stay put. And man, I just want to go, go, go. I want it all and I want it now and I want to see results. I want you to prove it to me. Man, all I got to do is look in the mirror. I didn't go hit that bong today. I didn't take a drink today. Wow. I spent 33 years of my life doing that every day and I'm only 50. So it's like, dude, come on. Miracle, right? You want results? You guys want results? You want proof? Go look in the mirror. Just go look in the mirror and ask yourself the question. If I'm truly powerless over this disease, I have no way to stop. I can't control it. I can't stay stopped. How is this possible? And then say, thank you, God. Because the answer is the grace of God. In your life, working the spiritual experience right here, right now. So when in doubt, go look in the mirror. Remind yourself that you couldn't do what you're doing right now. And you couldn't do what's happening in your life for yourself. Something is doing it for you. Right? So the distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book Varieties of Religious Experiences, indicate a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. And we wrote at the bottom, if I am honest enough to try, there is a simple, understandable way for me to form a relationship with the living creator that I will be able to feel and see. And there is a way that faith can be achieved that we will look at in the steps of process to go from belief to faith. And today, when you want proof that you can see and feel, go look in the mirror. And later on in the steps, when your relationships are restored and things that you were thought were unrepairable, you'll be able to see that in your life too. So we think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair with which each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. Okay, so I want you to think about that just for a second. There's something you're not going to hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's 100 people that wrote this book. What would most of 100 be in your mind? Just contemplate that. I'm looking for an answer. Just think about that. Most of us. So there's 100 here. This is when they wrote this book, it was the first 100. That was it. It says, not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. Think about that. Contemplate that. Remember the three questions. Did I feel like that? Did I think like that? Do I believe this program worked for me? And then another question that Dr. Silkworth brought up to us. Do I believe anything these people are going to say about themselves? Because he said we could, but the question we have, do I believe? What are they telling me? Most of the first 100 favored some sort of religious membership. I just got through telling you I'm a Christian, but not religious. That don't mean I haven't spent my time in church. That don't mean that the Bible doesn't open up for me every single day. That doesn't mean that following Jesus in my life doesn't look like trying to adhere to certain principles, right? Just means that I'm not walking around condemned and I'm not buying into the 17 different levels of this and this and this and this all coming from the same prophet. That's all. But come on, man. There's got to be one message here, but God help me find it kind of thing. That's for me, right? Now, I'm only sharing that with you guys because I'm one of these people that have decided to take a look into that. It's beautiful and it's wonderful and it's helpful. It's tangible for me, right? Now, granted, God of your own understanding, the only reason we're bringing this up, it's in the pages. I told you that the chapter's called There Is a Solution. So they're going to talk about the solution. And that's just something for you guys to contemplate. Do I feel like that might be something I should do? Am I kind of struggling with this whole concept anyway? And would that help me if maybe I looked around a little bit or talked to some people and said, hey, man, what are you doing? Where are you going on Sunday, bro? What's going on with you? Can I come with you? I don't know. So in the following chapter, they're going to close out the chapter here and they're going to tell me what's coming. In the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism. That's going to be the real mental obsession. We're going to talk about it for 2 solid weeks, man. That's all that chapter is about. Explanation of alcoholism, we understand it. Then a chapter addressed the agnostic. That's our second step. Many who were once in this class are now among our members. Oh, people that were agnostic are now among our members. What members? Probably the most of us that favor self-membership. That's just what they're sharing with me. Surprisingly enough, we find such convictions no great obstacle for a spiritual experience. So nothing, no level of prejudice or logic or reason or lack of honesty or lack of diving deep down inside yourself, diligently searching is an obstacle. Ain't nothing going to get away with the power of God if we just get out of the way. That's all we got to do. These steps will help us get out of the way and just allow him to reveal himself. That's all. He's already there. He's just going to reveal himself, right? I just got to turn towards him, man. That's all. Just turn around. Further on, there's going to be some clear cut directions that are going to give and to show how we're going to recover. So that's going to be our 4th step, our 5th step, our 6th step, our 7th step. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. After all that, these are followed by 42 personal stories. That's why I like the full-size big book. Every one of us in here could find something we relate to. We just start fingering through those things, man. There's some really good ones back there. Each individual in the personal stories describes his own language and from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. So here I am, I'm kind of struggling, I'm kind of wondering, like, what is this God thing? Oh man, really? Oh, I'm already dreading the 2nd step and the 3rd step, and I'm not even halfway through the 1st yet. Hey, I feel you. But it just told me right here, it's letting me know, that's why they're telling me on page 29, hey man, why don't you go check out some personal stories? Because there's 42 stories back there, and what are they about? They're in their own language and from their own point of view of other people. And they're about one thing only, the way they establish their relationship with God. So check them out. They're awesome. There's half of them are written by Rimmon. The other half I'm in. These give a fair cross section of our membership and a clear cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste, right? Because there's always controversy, you know? They're just trying to share with us, man, what worked with them. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages. And we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. So they got to be honest with us and let us know how hopeless and powerless they were, and how what their relationship with God looks like, and what this journey and walk towards surrender with inventory and prayer and meditation and amends and restitution and service. They got to let us know. They're not sugarcoating any of it. The coating of sugar on the end is happy, joyous, and free, and God's in our lives. Like that, that's what we're walking towards, man. And this whole mental obsession that we're starting to discuss doesn't really exist for us anymore. Remember, we're on guard, though. You know, you never know. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. So the last thing we transcribe here is, if I'm an alcoholic, powerless over alcohol, I'm never going to regain control. Do we believe that? I think we've come to that conclusion. Most of us have, right? We'll talk about next week about conceding to our innermost self. So that's going to be a big part of it. If I'm an alcoholic, powerless over alcohol, never going to regain control, do I have a choice? How can I admit powerlessness over alcohol and then say I have a choice today, or that I ever did? So when you're struggling with this whole conception of choice, don't overthink it. Open to page 29, look what you transcribed. It's that simple. It's the best way to talk about the power of choice. Do I believe if I'm an alcoholic, powerless over alcohol, I'm never going to ever have control over alcohol and drugs? Do I have a choice? Is there a choice involved in that? What would your choice be? My choice would be I'd be able to control the shit. I go out there and have two glasses of wine with my wife and hit the bong twice and then watch some Netflix and go to bed. And I do that like every day, and that'd be my level of control, right? I can't do that, man. Can't do that. So how do I have a choice? I don't. And how can I admit all of that and then say I have a choice? Or that I ever did, right? So it's just a real easy and simple way to talk about this choice thing, right? And don't get it twisted up. Relapse occurs and you say, well, I didn't have a choice. Nah, man, you don't have a choice when it comes to staying sober. Relapse occurs in your life. The mental obsession was on you like white on rice. And it happened, and it came in a subtle, baffling, cunning way. And I'll tell you one thing I told my sponsor: if I go out again, I ain't never coming back. And he looked me in the eye and said, there you go again, Jason, playing God. If God wants you to drink again, then you're going to drink again. And that's something you have to accept. And man, that's scary. But it's so true, because that's me in control. That's a recognition of the power of my mental obsession. That's a recognition of living in the present, not knowing what my journey looks like. I don't know. I don't know what God has in store for me. But I can pray that with action and honest prayer, meditation, and service to other people, that I can keep the obsession at bay through the power of God by no choice of my own. Stay sober another day. So that's it, man. Thank you guys so much. Our next assignment, I believe, is assignment 7, first half of more about alcoholism. I'll say it again. I appreciate those of you that are showing up. It means the world to me. I love each and every one of you. I'm open to any conversation. If any of you ever want to talk on a personal level, anything, you let me know. I'm here for you. I promise you, man, women, doesn't matter. You can call me anytime. Make your groups. Take a look at, you know, 84, 8 through 88, and where is your level of prayer and meditation? Could be simple as just getting quiet, reading something little spiritual in the morning, whatever it may be. But we talked a lot about the solution tonight, because it's the solution. So love you guys. I'm going to say a prayer for you. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. Amen. And that's it. See you guys next week, man. Love you.
Bye, Jason. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, Jason.
That was awesome. It was awesome.
Right on. Thanks, guys. I love you all. I'll see you soon.
We love you too, Jason.
Thank you.